If you've got a Bible with you, I'm going to ask you to turn to John chapter 21. And while you're turning there, I tell people quite often that I inherited my taste in music from my two older brothers. I have a brother 10 years older than I am, and a brother 8 years older than I am. And so I grew up listening to the music that they listened to. And I also got a little bit of musical taste from my dad. The first car that I remember us having was a Buick Electra 225. Anybody remember those? I mean, it was like a mammoth-sized vehicle. It would have, you know, you could get 16 in that car. But it had an eight-track player in it, and my dad always played eight tracks. And he was a fan of Floyd Kramer. Anybody remember Floyd Kramer? Okay, a few of you. And Hank Williams. Any Hank Williams fans? Okay. Any Hank Williams Jr. fans? Okay. Well, there's a song that Hank Sr. did, and Hank Jr. also recorded it. And I thought about asking Danny to lead it this morning, and I figured, no, that won't go over real well. And then I thought about playing the video, and I thought, well, that might not go over real well either. The name of the song is Mind Your Own Business. Anybody remember that song? If you mind your own business, you won't be minding mine. Now, the lyrics to that song describe a lot of things that most of us probably wouldn't think we ought to be doing anyway. But the chorus, repeated several times, says, why don't you mind your own business? Because if you mind your own business, you won't be minding mine. So with that, in John chapter 21, there is a story that we have actually talked about already. A story that we've talked about already, and it has to do with Peter primarily. And it begins in chapter 21, verse 15. And it describes Jesus asking Peter three times, do you love me? Simon, son of John, do you love me? And three times Peter says, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And then the third time Jesus asks the question, it says that Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him a third time. Now, most everyone reads this and connects this with the three times that Peter denied Jesus. Remember that story, right? You know, three times Peter denies Jesus, denies even knowing him. And the third time was when the rooster crowed. And Peter, so far as we know, really hadn't been seen much since that event. So in John's story, John's the only one that tells us this, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. Three times Jesus asks Peter, do you love me? And Peter three times says, yes, you know that I love you. And so Jesus goes on to tell Peter in verse 18, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. And then the writer tells us that Jesus is saying this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, Jesus says to Peter, follow me. Now, here's where we pick this up today. In verse 20, Peter turns and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved, and we assume that that's the writer of the story, John, Peter turns and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" It is so funny that the writer wants to remain anonymous, but he's giving us two pretty significant clues here as to who he is, right? So it's the disciple whom Jesus loved, and if you don't know who that is, well, it's the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the Last Supper and asked about who would betray him. Verse 21, when Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Lord, what about him? So we have this story that we've looked at partially a while back. And then as we get toward the end of the chapter, toward the end of the story, there's another question. And it's a question that Peter asks Jesus about John. What about him? Now, we've already set the context within Peter's reinstatement, if you want to call it that. And there's also this thing going on between the followers of John and, we assume, the followers of Peter. Okay? If you go back in John and you go to chapter 20, it really seems like his story ends with the end of chapter 20, right? That really sounds like where the story stops. But it continues into chapter 21, and chapter 21 is almost 100% about Peter. It's pretty much all about Peter. And Peter's running to meet Jesus and spending time with him. And then these three questions being asked of Peter from Jesus wants to correspond with each denial. And so this is all about Peter's re-inclusion. Okay? Now, most scholars would say John was the last gospel written. It was written maybe as late as around 100, but certainly in the late 80s, maybe early 90s. It was written well after Jesus' communities were established. And there was a distinct Johannine community, a community of Jesus followers that appeared to be primarily following and devoted to that disciple whom Jesus loved. You know who that was? It was the one that leaned on him at the supper and asked, "Who's going to betray you?" And some scholars are of the opinion that the Johannine community didn't really think much of Peter. That Peter's reputation really took a hit because he had denied that he knew the Lord. And so chapter 21, some might even say, was added to show that Peter's okay. Peter's okay because here's what happened. Okay? Jesus didn't hold it against him. Jesus went to him. Jesus welcomed him. Jesus embraced him. Jesus even went so far as to three times ask him if he loved him. And so this is all about, in the minds of some, this is all about showing the primary audience of John's gospel that Peter is okay guy. Okay? I don't know that you have to get that to get this, but I think it's helpful. So that's going on. And so after Jesus asks Peter three times, "Do you love me?" And after Peter responds to Jesus three times, "Yes, you know that I do," Jesus says, "Let me tell you something. When you were young, you were boisterous. You were maybe kind of a loud mouth. Maybe your mouth moved before your brain thought through the words. Maybe you were a little bit impulsive. But let me tell you something. When you get old, things are going to be different. In fact, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Now, if we just read that, we might not be real sure of what Jesus is talking about, but then the writer inserts in verse 19, Jesus said this to indicate what kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And this would have been written 20 to 30 years, maybe, after Peter would have been crucified. And so the writer says that Jesus is saying this to tell us how Peter was going to die. And then Jesus says to Peter, "You follow me. I'm telling you, Peter, that you're going to die. You're going to die in my service, and this is how you're going to die. But you follow me anyway. I want you to follow me even though I'm telling you it's going to cost you your life." Okay? Is everybody with me? Peter turns and sees John. And he says, "Lord, what about him? What about this guy?" Look at verse 22. Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Now, verse 23, I think, is a major reason why this last little part of the story is here. Verse 23 says, "Because of this, the rumor spread among the believers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, 'If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?'" Okay, so evidently there was this rumor that went around about John, and if tradition is true, John probably was the last apostle to die. He probably did live to a ripe old age, exiled on that island of Patmos. But there was a rumor that evidently got started based on what Jesus said here, that John was either going to live maybe forever, or he was certainly going to live a really, really, really long time, and before John would die, Jesus would return. That must have been the rumor. Now, I'm tempted to do my Tombstone Doc Holliday impersonation, but I won't do that. But that was the rumor. And so this is here to combat that. Okay? Jesus never told Peter that John was going to be alive forever or remain until he came back. The importance of what Jesus said to Peter is, "Peter, you are to follow me." Okay? Everybody with me? Now, Peter's question about John could have been taken a couple of different ways. In fact, some English translations read this way: "Lord, what will this man do?" Any of you have a translation that reads that way? "Lord, what will this man do? What will this man do?" In other words, okay, you've told me that I am to follow you. You've implied what is going to be involved in my service to you. Lord, what about this man? What will he do? What are his responsibilities going to be? What manner of service is he going to be performing? Okay? There's another possible way of looking at this that says Peter's question is related more to how John might die. And that's based really more on Jesus' response. In other words, Jesus tells Peter Peter, you're going to be crucified, but you follow me anyway. And Peter turns and he looks at John and he says, well, how's he going to die? What about him? Okay, so there's two possible ways of looking at this. If we look at it that second way, then Jesus' reply makes a lot more sense. If it's my will that he lives until I come, what's that to you? So that makes the second possibility make a little bit more sense. Peter's question is, how is he going to die? And Jesus says, if it's my will that he lives till I come back, what is that to you? You follow me. Okay? So what's all this got to do for us? What's the relevance of this for us? If you go into any room of recovery, any 12-step meeting, you're liable to hear some of the following phrases. You're liable to hear phrases that have to do with taking one's own inventory and not taking another person's inventory. You're liable to hear a phrase like, stay in your own lane. You're liable to hear a phrase something like, stay on your side of the street. And here's the most profound one of all. I want you to repeat it after me. Charlie and I used to say this to one another all the time. Are you ready? I want you to repeat after me. You ready? Not my monkey, not my circus. Okay. Not my monkey, not my circus. You hear phrases like that used quite a bit. You might hear a phrase something like this. Don't judge your insides by another person's outsides. Don't judge your insides by another person's outsides. You hear phrases like this because in the rooms of recovery, there is a great deal of emphasis put on focusing on one's self and one's own recovery and one's own personal spiritual walk and work and development. And what somebody else is or isn't doing is not my affair. It's not my concern. It is none of my business. You might even hear, if you see a husband and a wife in a recovery meeting together, you might hear something like this. Well, he works his program and I work my program. Or she works her program and I work my program. And really, never the two shall meet. It's interesting, this rhetorical question that Jesus asks in response to Peter's question, what is that to you? That really means none of your business. That's really what that means. Jesus is essentially telling Peter, that's none of your business. What's going to happen to John, it's not your affair. It's not your concern. It's none of your business. You, Peter, follow me. The fourth step of the 12 steps talk about taking a personal inventory. And the fourth step, many would say, is where the real work of 12-step recovery begins. It's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. It's where I take a look deep inside myself and acknowledge the good that's there, but I also look at my defects of character and how they have impacted my life. And so there's a great deal of emphasis put on that step and that personal reflection. And I cannot do that for anybody else. If I'm honest about it, it's hard enough to do for myself. As a sponsor with guys that I work with, I can't do their inventory for them. They have to do it themselves. They have to see themselves. I really don't even need to be pointing out things that I see in them, because that's usually not helpful. One has to do one's own inventory. Something else you might see in a 12-step room is whenever a newcomer comes in, you might see a few old-timers maybe whispering to themselves, maybe laughing a little bit. And what they're doing is asking one another how long they think that person's going to stick around. And it's done in a joking way, but it's done nonetheless. Now, this tendency doesn't just happen in rooms of recovery. Maybe this is not as true anymore as it used to be at one time, but once upon a time, whenever someone would come forward at the end of a service, if it wasn't to be baptized or to place membership, what was the first thing that went into everybody else's mind? What'd that person do? I wonder what they've done. Now, if it had already been in the paper, then you already knew, and you were just waiting for them to come forward anyway, because they brought reproach upon the church. But we have such a tendency as a part of our human condition to be nosy or to inject ourselves into the affairs of others or to try to control the life of another because we think we know best. What's good for you? I think I know best what's good for you. Why do we tend to have such a hard time minding our own business? Because if I'm looking at what I think is wrong with you, I'm not looking at myself. If I'm looking at what I think is wrong with you, then I'm not taking that deep, hard look at my own defects of character. If I'm comparing myself with your shortcomings, then all that's doing is feeding my false self, feeding my ego and making me feel better about me in a very superficial and shallow way. If I want to truly follow Jesus, I have to follow Jesus. I have to follow those teachings and that example and that way of life. And what you do or don't do is on you. I'm not put here to micromanage your life. I have a hard enough time with my own. But almost, it is just so often that someone says, what about that person? What are they doing? Or they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. We see that over and over and over, and it happens in the church, I guarantee you, just as much as it happens in the workplace, in the home, in schools. It happens because we're people. And we have somehow bought into this trap that says, I don't have to worry as much about me. I'll just act as if I'm really worried and concerned about you. Jesus says to Peter, what's going to happen to John is none of your business. What business is that of yours? What is that to you? If we could hear those words spoken into our hearts and our minds on a consistent basis every time I injected myself into somebody else's life, every time I stuck my nose into somebody else's business, every time I questioned somebody else's motive, or every time I judged myself in being any way superior to someone else. What if I were to hear those words? Some of us, that'd be all we'd hear in our head. That'd be all we'd hear in our head. It would be on a loop, and it would be play after play after play. What is that to you? You follow me. This may be difficult to hear. But Peter needed to hear it. Maybe we do too. What somebody else does in their service to the Lord is not my affair. If someone else is serving God faithfully and they're doing what they do, how they do it, because they feel, called to do that, that's not my affair. It's not my concern. Charlie and I don't walk into one another's office on a regular basis and say, let me see your sermon for next week and see if I approve of it. We trust each other. We trust what we're going to do with the subject matter. What about this person? What about that person? Jesus says, what is that to you? You follow me. May you be so focused on being like Jesus that I cannot be aware of what I might consider a shortcoming in somebody else. May we focus on following Jesus and serving Jesus in all of our complementary ways so that the kingdom of God is glorified through this place in this community. And may I and may you and may we acknowledge that every one of us has different gifts and different functions and different avenues of service. And I really don't need you to manage me, and I will not manage you. May we trust in the one who made us all to manage us all. Amen. So if you're here this morning and maybe all this is just confusing language to you anyway, and you're not real sure about what following Jesus means or looks like, I guess one thing you can ascertain, and that is that following Jesus doesn't mean you stick your nose in somebody else's business. You might have picked up on that. But, we'd love to have a conversation with you about what it means to be a Jesus follower. The last several weeks we've seen a lot of pictures on this screen behind me of people that have chosen this church family to partner with and to be a part of, and if that's your desire, we would love to see that happen as well. Maybe you just need somebody to pray for you. I doubt this is going to happen, but, maybe you might come forward this morning and say, I need prayers because I just love to stick my nose where it doesn't belong. I doubt any of you are going to do that, but if you're brave enough, you know, we'll pray together. Because I have to acknowledge that there is a 2x4 in my eye before I try to get a splinter out of yours. So as we stand and as we sing together, if we can help you in any way, you can come.